Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, wireless headphone options are growing in popularity, and frankly, the market of affordable options is growing as well. Tell you what, we're going to be talking about that and the elimination of the headphone jack on some phones. We can talk about wireless headphone options. We'll talk Starlink, internet service, and cybersecurity with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, back with us. He's an information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He works with designing, he develops and implements security standards and protocols. So as we talk with him, what questions do you have about wireless headphones, maybe satellite internet or cybersecurity? Take any of your technology-related questions and love to hear from you. So give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGrew, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
So wireless headphones have been around for a few years, but it feels like they've really taken off recently. Is that your impression as well?
Yeah, I think for a variety of reasons, people get tired of cables, and I think a lot of us had to be in different areas with remote meetings or remote schooling. So having a little bit more flexibility away from all the cables we're, I guess, have maybe grown up with has been a desire. So a lot of new wireless capabilities that have been embraced by a lot of people.
Yeah, and as I looked at my own iPhone, which is the latest version, it does not have a headphone jack. So manufacturers, are getting on board with this.
Yeah, and that's another interesting shift in terms of the devices that people use, whether you actually do have a headphone jack or not. People might use multiple devices. So if you do have an Apple device or you have an Android device, but you also might have something else. You might have a vehicle that's actually using some kind of wireless technology as well. So in some instances, your phone or your headset may actually be your car. Instead of a headset that you're traditionally used to wearing. And so a lot of the cabled options are definitely switching, and there's a lot of great cableless options, which, you know, that technology, primarily Bluetooth, is used. It's been around for quite some time, but there are a lot of new capabilities with newer revisions, and, you know, people want to make sure that your devices work not just with one particular manufacturer, but that they can work with a variety of different devices, like your laptop, your cell phone, your vehicle. It could be a good variety of devices.
You know, I'm thinking about, there are people out there who say, well, wait a minute, I want to use the wired headphones. If you buy a new phone, can you still use the old wired headphones?
In most cases, you can. If your phone or other device does not have the standard headphone jack that we're all used to, in many cases you can get an adapter, whether it's a USB-C adapter for a variety of devices, or Apple does also have an adapter that allows you to plug in a more traditional headphone jack. So in many cases you do have that capability. But in those others where, you know, that might not be a possibility, the shift is really moving towards using Bluetooth or other wireless technologies to have that connection. And I think everybody has a different feeling on which one they like. People that move around, having cables can actually be not only just a little bit irritating, it can even be dangerous. I know people who've walked around with headphones, and if you get snagged on something in the wrong way, it could take, you know, your headphones tumbling, or it could even take you tumbling. So sometimes getting rid of the cables can actually be a nice safety mechanism, too.
And then there's also the earbuds versus the over-the-ear headphones to consider when you're thinking about purchasing something. How do you make that decision?
And that's a challenging decision. I can definitely say at least what my preference is. I do use both. But I use each one in a different situation. I do have the over-the-ear, you know, headphones. They tend to be a little bit more comfortable if I have them on for most of the day. It tends to feel a little bit better. The other earbuds that you can have inside the ear, some are more or less comfortable, but you also do have to try the various attachments that they have, because everyone's ear and fit is a little bit different. So there's a little bit of troubleshooting and trial and error to see, you know, how does this fit for my ear? How am I used to it on, you know, a long period of time? So you do have to test it a little bit to see how the earbuds are going to fit in your ear. And each design can be a little bit different. So some earbuds just may work for you better than others. So being able to test it is nice. You can't necessarily go to a place and just test earbuds. You are inserting them in your ear. So, you know, there's a hygienic aspect to it, but there are several different attachments to test with. And I actually really like having the over the ear protection, just because it helps to block out sound a little bit more. But there's a lot of great noise canceling with either device. But I think for, at least for me, speaking for myself, having the earbuds is nice when I'm a little bit more mobile. But having the bigger headset is if I'm actually using it for a longer period of time. They just tend to be, at least for me, a little bit more comfortable if I'm wearing them for hours and hours of the day.
And how do you connect them to your phone?
In most cases, you can use Bluetooth, which is probably the technology you're going to use for most devices. One thing to note, too, outside of earbuds generally you're only going to be using through Bluetooth. If you do have larger headphones, they actually many times will still come with a headphone jack. So you might still have the capability to plug it in or use it over USB. So that is kind of another benefit of having the larger headphones. Is usually you're going to have some more options in terms of being able to plug it into a device, whether it's a computer or, you know, a cell phone or a tablet. But most of the time you're going to be using Bluetooth. And that's going to be the same technology you're going to use for a cell phone, for a laptop, potentially a desktop, even though they usually don't come with Bluetooth installed by default. But they will also come with a variety of new vehicles, which is another thing to consider. You know, vehicles are definitely trying to go more hands-free with a variety of usage, because you do not want to be using a phone while you're driving. You want to make sure that you're paying attention to the road. So having that capability where you're interacting with your device through your car, either by speech or maybe even through a control panel, you know, is more beneficial. It keeps your attention kind of where it needs to be. But I think that's also, it brings up an interesting challenge with a lot of these devices that I have a nice little story for. These headphones, you can what they call pair or connect with a variety of devices. So my headphones, or even my cell phone, I can pair with a variety of different headphones. I can also pair them with my vehicle. I do have an interesting story where it's always good to know how your devices are connected to each other. I actually had a recent situation where somebody was, you know, on a phone call. They were using a Bluetooth connection. One of our vehicles turned on that is also using Bluetooth. And with most of the devices that you have that are Bluetooth enabled, they're going to seek out those devices that they're connected or paired with. What ended up happening is that phone call got transferred to the vehicle where someone else was sitting. So the headphones that somebody was using could no longer hear the phone call. The phone call was still active, but it automatically got transferred to basically the speaker system in the car. So it's always really, really good to know what are those other things that you're using, because really interesting situations can appear. I think that's the only time I've ever had something like that happen, but it is important to know, because those odd little idiosyncrasies can turn up.
I had something kind of like that. I had we were going to an event with some friends, and I picked up the one friend, and suddenly the music was playing. There was music playing in the car, and I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on, and it was actually coming off the friend's phone who had just entered the car. Finally, yeah. It took a couple of minutes, but finally figured it out. Oh, man. Well, let's take a call. Anita in Holman, we'll go to you now. Hi, Anita.
Well, good morning. I just have a question. My husband rides his bike quite a bit with wired headphones that are totally noise-canceling, which is pretty cumbersome, but also I think kind of dangerous because I tried to beep and wave to him the other day when he was biking and he didn't hear me, and it has me a little worried. So I kind of want to gift him with some wireless headphones that are not totally noise-canceling and are comfortable to wear with a bike helmet. Can you suggest anything kind of affordable?
That is a good question. So there are a few features I would look for. With a helmet, I think an earbud is really probably the only thing that's really going to fit. And I think with a helmet, you might potentially have some other noise challenges. There is one feature that I would look for specifically when taking a look at any earbuds. And it's primarily with sound canceling and ambient sound. So some pairs of headphones that I have, they have the capability to switch between noise canceling, where you don't have the capability or it muffles a lot of the sound around you, just so you can focus on what you're listening to. But there are others that actually amplify some of that ambient sound. So if you are in a busy intersection and you want to make sure that you can listen to what's in your headphones, but also make sure that you're not completely blind to the sounds around you, you have those sounds coming in. So I would actually look for probably an earbud that does specifically call out capabilities for having ambient sound turned on or also having it noise canceling, because you might want situations for either, but that's actually a really, really nice feature. It becomes, for me, I usually have the noise canceling on, and it actually is really strange for me when I have the ambient sound turned on, because I'm usually not used to hearing that sound around me. But it's a really nice feature if you want to make sure that you don't miss something that's around you, whether it's, you know, somebody riding their bike down the street, or if it's just somebody that happens to be standing behind you and you never heard them actually approach you. You at least are able to be a little bit more conscious and aware of your environment. So I would look for an earbud that does have ambient sound. There are a variety of different earbuds you can get for a large variety of cost. But I would focus on those that have ambient sound. And usually I like to take a look at reviews to see, one, you know, how many people are using them and how many people have reviewed them. But also, are the reviews usually, you know, at that 4 or 5 star range? So look for ambient sound, probably look for earbuds, and then look for those that have higher ratings and higher counts of individuals that have rated them. And I think you're going to tie into the right focus. Specifically for bicycles, there actually might be ones designed specifically for helmets, which I'm uncertain of. There actually might be some good biking websites that actually might tune in specifically on headphones in that situation, because I can imagine helmets would be a little bit more specialized. But definitely look for that ambient sound feature, because that can be a really good safety and awareness feature.
Ah, Anita, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. So the range of prices on that, what is it, $10 to $50, or what does it run?
Yeah, they can range from probably 20 to 200, and it depends on kind of some of the features that you're getting. You might be getting some additional noise canceling or ambient sound features. They may simply have higher quality components, but I'd say generally a lot of earbuds are usually between the $50 to $100 range, but you can get, you know, much more expensive earbuds depending on what you're looking for.
I'm sure of that. Well, Tom in Northern Iron County was wondering about the static when Starlink will go public, and that's something we can take up next. But just in the meantime, Jesse LeGrew is with us. He's an information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Jane Rotunda, our on-air producer today, Natalie Gaeta, our producer, Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of things on the show today, wireless headphones, Starlink, ransomware. We've got a lot of things we can cover with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Join in with your questions or comments. The number is 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Any ideas when Starlink will be going public?
Yeah, and so right now, any individual that's interested in signing up for Starlink services can actually, they can sign up now. It does sound, at least from their website, that it's going to take, you know, at least 6 months potentially to get the hardware. So even if you do order or try to sign up today, it could be 6 months before you get the equipment to actually connect to Starlink. It did sound like the connectivity to at least the North and the South Pole is going to be up relatively soon in August, and I believe there are others piloting the service right now. But for a variety of the individuals that are signing up, it is going to be, you know, at least 6 months until you're probably getting equipment, and that's with the monthly subscription charge and then the satellite dish that you are basically going to put outside to make sure you get that connection. So it sounds like it's a ways away, but it's actually relatively quick in order to kind of get that connectivity. And this is really a big benefit for those that are not able to take advantage of high-speed internet connections, primarily in rural communities where it's really challenging to be physically connected to the infrastructure that a lot of people in the city are able to use day-to-day, whether it's cable or DSL.
So there's a bunch of satellites up there. Maybe you just explain it in case somebody is not familiar with Starlink.
Yeah, so basically there's a bunch of satellites that are orbiting the Earth. I think right now they've deployed approximately 1,800 satellites. I think the count that they were looking for was around 11,000 or 13,000. So it's a large number of satellites that will be basically orbiting the Earth. And your device will be able to connect through the satellite dish to one of these satellites so that you can get your internet connection. So your internet is basically, instead of what we think of as the internet, you're physically plugged in somewhere on the ground. You're wirelessly connecting with these satellites that are rotating around the Earth. And so that is, you know, you're using wireless internet. It's not dissimilar to a variety of other wireless services, depending on whether it's coming from something in orbit or it's coming from like a cell phone tower. Our cell phone towers tend to be physically located on the ground, but you also might have communication with satellites or anything kind of surrounding the Earth. But it really is meant you can get to internet anywhere, so it kind of takes that cable away, but you do have potential challenges with weather, but you do definitely need to have that satellite dish so you can make sure to get that strong connection. And the Starlink service is just one of many services out there. There are other satellite services that are actually currently available, but they might be in certain regions, and there are other initiatives, including from Amazon and other companies, to actually deploy a complete wireless infrastructure orbiting the Earth for, you know, a similar need. So over the next 5 years, we're going to see a lot of different capabilities for getting internet in rural communities that are just really challenging for us today, because putting in physical infrastructure requires digging things up, which might be roads, other landscapes, and it can be really time-consuming and expensive. And granted, putting these satellites in orbit is also expensive, but it takes away that physical component and that construction that, you know, we have to worry about with traditional internet.
Let's take a call. Brad, who's traveling in Wisconsin. Brad, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. So I just wanted to make a comment about the noise-canceling headphones that allow you to still hear everything that's going around you. It's called jawbone technology. They more or less sit on or around your ear and connect through the bones around your ear, but it doesn't cover anything of the ear.
Hmm. Are you familiar with that, Jesse?
No, I'm not familiar with that particular term. I'm familiar with jawbone, I believe jawbone headsets, but that term itself I am not.
Hmm. Interesting. So, Brad, what is, so this is something that, where is it attached?
Well, depending on the manufacturer, one in particular, a company called Aftershocks, it goes around your head, rests on your ears, and then the two nodules sit right in front of your ear.
Okay. So that may be kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It doesn't impede wearing a bicycle helmet like the other callers said her husband rides around on a bike with headset.
I got it. Okay. Well, thanks for calling. Any other comment, Jesse, from you?
No. I think those are definitely a good option. Right now I'm actually looking at pictures, so they are kind of around the head where it's a little bit more comfortable. So it's kind of like you do have a little bit more physical connection than just the earbuds, which allows it to hold things in place, and then you don't have to worry about kind of where the helmet's sitting. So that's another good option. I have seen similar headphones in the past, so that's a great option to look at.
Brad, thanks again. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way. Open lines will get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. We've been talking a lot about wireless headphones. We've mentioned a little bit about Starlink, but we can take other questions in this area as well. So feel free to join in. Paul emailed and wants to know about Bluetooth bone conducting headphones. Is that the same thing we were just talking about?
Yes, I do believe that was the same thing. And I haven't actually read too much about bone conducting headphones, so I don't know if I have a whole lot to add to it.
All right. Well, there we go. What do you think? Back to Starlink for a little bit here, and Elon Musk. There are some critics of the project. What are people concerned about?
I think there's, at least in terms of kind of the internet service in general, I think there are concerns with, there are concerns by other companies in terms of just being able to deploy their own wireless technology, just due to the amount of satellites that are going to be in low orbit, in addition to just kind of clouding and basically taking up too much of that area by these satellites. So we'll have less likelihood to put other items in those areas, but it also could be physically obstructing to individuals that do stargaze or that do astronomy research. So if you do have a lot of these devices in low Earth orbit, it can create concerns with the other things that, you know, we're trying to look at outside of our own atmosphere. And I think that's definitely discussions that are still ongoing. It's definitely not limited just to Starlink, and I think there are ways that it's trying to be addressed just to make sure that there's less reflection, because those light reflections can cause issues with, if you do have time-lapse photography, they can actually show up over time, and they're having some ways to try to reduce that challenge, but it's definitely going to be a concern going forward.
And again, I think you said go to starlink.com. You can go there probably to learn more or even to sign up if you want to. Starlink.com, right?
Yep, starlink.com. They have a lot of great information there. And there's going to be, and I think it's going to be a very interesting over the next several years, because there's going to be, I think, more of these kinds of services available. So I think right now, in terms of where things are, Starlink is going to be definitely ahead, especially in terms of SpaceX and being able to put a variety of their satellites out into low Earth orbit. But we are going to see more competition and more of these offerings from services like Amazon, and it'll be a great service for people who need it.
Let's go to Alec, who is traveling in Wisconsin. Hi, Alec.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to add my two cents about the bone-conducting headphones. I'm actually wearing the ones that the previous caller had mentioned by Aftershocks. One of the things that has annoyed me over the years, I've been through many, many Bluetooth headsets, and I hate things stuck actually inside my ear all day long because they're so uncomfortable. These I wear all day for work purposes. They're comfortable, they're clear, and they never, ever fall off, which is the other thing with the ones that go into your ear because they kept falling out. So I just wanted to just give you an idea of what they sound like and to... a little plug for the company, even though I don't get paid commission, I should do.
Alec, thanks for calling. Well, that's a nice call. A comment on it, Jesse?
Yeah, it's great to know, kind of, because I've never actually used the bone conducting headphones ever. And I don't even know if I've really recognized them when people have been wearing them. But it is good to know that, you know, I think that comfort, especially for a long period of time when wearing anything, especially an earbud, which at least for me tends to be a lot more challenging with extended usage. Having that comfort if you are going to wear it all day is really important. And I've been reading up just a little bit on the bone conducting headphones, and it can also be extremely useful for those that already do have challenges with hearing, because you are using other vibrations in the bone rather than kind of the traditional sound waves, which are vibrations, but you're able to take in those vibrations in a different way. So it does seem like a great option. I do like the fact that it does seem a little bit more comfortable over a longer period of time. It kind of makes me want to try one out. I already have two pairs of headphones, but, you know, who knows if this could be a game changer. But it does seem to be a really nice option.
I'm half betting with myself that a couple of months from now, when you're back on the show, you may have a pair and you'll be able to comment on them. Well, Alec, again, thanks for calling. I appreciate that very much. Let's go to Jeff in West Salem next. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Well, back in the 70s, I used to ride a bike a lot, and I purchased something. It was probably from Radio Shack. It was called the Bonafone. It was like a small, almost like one of these inflatable life jackets you wear now, and the speakers would rest on your collarbone, and it tied in the front, you know, like a life jacket does, so it stayed on, and it worked really good.
Well, maybe that was the first version of these, Jesse.
Yeah, it sounds like it's coming from a similar idea.
Jeff, thanks. That's a little bit of history. That goes back to the 70s. All right. Mary in New London, we'll go to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, I just bought a new iPhone 12. Everything works flawlessly, except I can't get the little slot open that holds the SIM card. And I don't know, I don't want to press too hard. I wonder if you have any tips to help me get this thing open.
Yeah, so I don't think you're going to break anything. So a lot of them you do have to push kind of hard, and you can get specialized tools in order to do it. If you do get, for example, a new SIM card, they usually come with a tool. Honestly, I use paper clips because they're everywhere, so... as long as you do have a small enough paper clip to fit in that hole, I would go ahead and push with that. it might be easier if you have a pliers or something just to hold the paper clip so you can push it in because you can get a little bit more force in. But I wouldn't worry about breaking it. That's really the only way you have to open it anyway. So I would do what you can with a paper clip and go ahead and push that in there. If you do get to a point where you almost feel like you have to hit it with a hammer, you might stop at that point. But I wouldn't be concerned with breaking it. They tend to be very resilient. But otherwise, you could go to just about any store, and they can help you open it as well. But a normal paper clip should work fine. And they, you know, they do have the specialized tools, but I think a pliers and a paper clip, just push really hard. Eventually, it will pop open a little bit and allow you to, you know, pull the rest of that SIM card holder and the SIM card out. So I wouldn't be too concerned. Just don't hit it with a hammer, and I think you should be fine.
And I'm sure there are people listening there saying, why the heck or what the heck's a SIM card, and why would I want to take it out?
Yeah, and a SIM card is usually tied specifically to your cell phone provider, but it may also store additional information regarding your cell phone plan. It could have contacts actually stored on your SIM card. And I think quite some time ago when GSM, you know, more global phone plans existed, having the SIM card was actually really, really neat, where you could travel in different areas and use different phones. And, you know, rather than needing to go into a cell phone provider and, you know, do a whole lot of work with them to switch to a different phone, you simply take your SIM card, plug it into a new phone, your existing phone number and contacts and other data could actually, you know, kind of come up for you automatically, depending on what the capabilities of those SIM cards were. But it's really going to be tied to your provider. And sometimes your providers, like I did, will request that you actually switch them out. T-Mobile, for example, Sprint is now part of T-Mobile, or, you know, Sprint is now T-Mobile. So for those that have had a Sprint phone, they're getting a request to actually replace their SIM card to make sure that they're able to connect to the proper infrastructure and that the back end is connected correctly. So you might be switching SIM cards for a variety of reasons. Many cases, it's because you're just swapping devices and you just need to take your SIM card with you. But it can hold contacts and other data. It just depends on how your phone's configured and how you're using that card.
Interesting. Thank you, Mary, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Regarding wireless headphones on the bike, Terry in Roberts emailed, bike helmets with speakers built in could be an option.
That was not an option I had actually considered.
So that would be probably be an expensive bike helmet, but... And how often do you change your helmet would kind of factor in, I would think. But, yeah, I guess why not? If you can get them built right into the helmet, that certainly sounds like an option. Again, you can join in at 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Questions about wireless, questions about problems you may be having with your computer or your phone. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got an experience to share. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Also in the news, there was a big ransomware attack that, I think 800 businesses were involved. What do we need to know about how and why that happened?
Yeah, and so recently, and there's definitely been a lot of ransomware in the news, not just over the last few months, but I mean, for the last few years, there have been some significant things that have come up with ransomware, not just for home computers, but a lot of businesses. And most recently, Kaseya had some issues with one particular product that's actually used to manage IT infrastructure. So a lot of organizations have software packages that help to, you know, maintain updates on various devices or help to maintain inventory of a variety of assets. So what happened is there was a compromise with Kaseya's what they call VSA platform that's actually used by a variety of organizations to manage those assets. And that allowed bad software basically to get on many of these devices. And once that software was on there, at that point, they could kind of do just about anything they wanted to with those devices. And in this case, it was to actually encrypt those devices and then hold those encryption keys for ransom. So if people actually wanted to be able to read that data or use it, they would need to be able to, they would need to purchase those keys so they could decrypt it. So we've heard about SolarWinds over the last several months. It's a very similar supply chain attack. Where a lot of the trust that we give towards a variety of vendors, that trust is exploited a little bit, where those platforms and those services actually, instead of just giving us the software that's meant to fix all of our broken stuff, it actually ends up breaking our stuff. So it does exactly what we don't want it to do. You know, people use the software to make sure that things can be fixed in a timely basis so they can manage things. You know, I have one computer or two computers at home. It's relatively easy for me to update it. When you have a company that has hundreds or thousands of computers, you know, they use these kinds of software platforms to manage those devices because you can't just have that many people manually updating devices, which is why these packages are extremely useful. And this infrastructure was taken advantage of, which allowed easy spread to these systems and compromise a variety of organizations all at the same time. So it's it was a large impact to a variety of the organizations that did fall victim to it.
Let's take a call. Barbara in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Okay. Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I'm looking for, and I'm pretty efficient in knowledge about headphones. I just have the normal ones that you get with the iPhone still, and they're driving me nuts because the wire gets caught on everything, including my dog jumps up and pulls them out. So I'm just wondering, and I know I missed the first part of the show. You may have gone over this. What are the best kinds? Because I'd also like not only headphones, wireless, but a noise-canceling device in them as well. And I don't want to always have it on noise-canceling. I just want that option. I don't know if you can get two-in-one or separate.
Yeah.
If you have to get separate.
We did talk about that a little earlier, Jesse, but worth repeating. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so there's a variety of options. I think a lot of Apple users really do like to use Apple devices. And so there are Apple AirPods or AirPod Pros, and they do have noise-canceling features that are available. You can use them wirelessly. But there are also other manufacturers that will work with iPhone devices that also do have noise-canceling, and you can turn it on or you can turn it off. I do have a pair of Sony earbuds that I use. I can turn on ambient sound. I can turn on the noise canceling, but I can also have it as kind of a normal headset as well. So there are many that have it. I would just make sure whatever you choose, just see if it does have noise canceling. You might want the ambient sound. I tend to not use it very much, but that might be a feature that you want. But most of the time, you can actually, it's a feature you can turn on and off, and it's not something that's on all the time. So I think you can find a variety of options out there to do that, that are completely wireless, that use Bluetooth, and that will work well with your iPhone. And they could be on the very high end, like Apple AirPods Pro are more of a high end, a little bit more expensive, but they work really well, and a lot of people really do love them. But you can also save a little bit of money and get a different device from a different manufacturer, or even just the more basic AirPods from Apple that can also serve the same need. So you do have a lot of options. And I would definitely take advantage of the reviews that other people have for them. But even if you do have an iPhone, there are a variety of non-Apple options that can also get you what you're looking for.
All right. Thanks very much for that question, Barbara. Appreciate it. Glenda emailed, every time Windows 10 updates on her PC, she loses her Wi-Fi connection. Any advice?
So one thing that it might be is when you do connect to wireless, and so I'm going to guess here, when you do connect to wireless, they do have an option, which is usually a little checkbox, and it states automatically connect. And if you do want your wireless to automatically connect after you reboot and you log into your computer, or if you're just disconnecting and reconnecting your wireless, you want to make sure that automatically connect is checked. One thing you might need to do in your lower right-hand corner where you do see your options to connect to wireless, you can connect or highlight your wireless, disconnect it, and then you may just want to set up that connection from scratch, ensure that connect automatically is checked, and then hit connect. And hopefully every time you reboot after that, it'll automatically connect to your wireless and you won't have to worry about it again. I'd also keep an eye, if you do have any kind of network cable plugged in, that could be a reason it doesn't connect automatically, but usually it's just gonna be that connect automatically checkbox that will allow you to reconnect without needing to do it manually every single time.
All right, there you go, Glenda. Eve in Madison, back to bikes again. Eve in Madison uses a phone holder on her handlebars for her bike listening, much like a car stereo. And I've seen those in action, too.
Yeah, and a lot of people do use those, not just for, you know, kind of a mobile speaker, but if you are planning a route, a lot of people do use applications to go through different routes where you can have kind of virtual races or competitions, and so actually having just a mount for a device on your bike is can be really handy.
Liam in Nina emailed. He's a systems engineer, and he's been using a script to enable BitLocker encryption on devices, but it will not kick off the actual encryption process, only enable it. If he removes the machine from the domain and re-adds it, it suddenly kicks off the BitLocker encryption process. So that's the only triggering event he can find other than manually running BitLocker. Are you aware of any script method or other automated method that would start the encryption process once BitLocker is in place?
Ooh, that is a really good and specific question. Recently I have not done that myself to actually enable BitLocker and start the encryption process on a device. So I don't have an easy answer. Normally I would look at kind of the scripting you're probably already doing, either using PowerShell or a different language. I will see if I can find something that might be helpful by the time we wrap up today.
Okay, well, we've got news coming up in a few minutes, so maybe that'll give you some time to take a look. Someone else wondered about all of the electromagnetic sound waves and everything, and whether or not this might have an impact on our health. Somebody emailed that in earlier. Comment on that? I mean, is all this having any effect on our health?
Yeah, I think there's. I think that's has been a concern by many people in the past, and still currently is as well. And I'll always preface with, I'm not a doctor, so I can only state at least what I believe and what I've read. I'd say to the large extent, most of the signals that we're using on a day-to-day basis are not strong enough to cause harm. But anything that we do, if we have anything that's strong enough, you know, you could potentially create some additional risk health-wise. But any of those signals or any of those transmissions would likely need to be sufficiently strong where they're probably going to be far away from you anyway. So I would say a lot of the day-to-day wireless traffic that we have is likely relatively benign. But it is something to keep in mind, especially, you know, knowing your surroundings and your environment. So if you don't have areas where those kinds of signals are more concentrated or of sufficient strength, at least for my day-to-day, it's not something that I worry about.
Another question back to this cybersecurity. Somebody was wondering if there's something that we as consumers can do to minimize these types of attacks.
Yeah, and it's a great question. There are a variety of things, and I think one thing that not just companies but also individuals can learn from these situations is always, you know, back up your data and have that backup available offline. So a lot of people might back up their computers to an external hard drive. Make sure after you back up your data, it is disconnected from the network or disconnected from your computer. If somebody does manage to encrypt your computer and your hard drive with all your backups are connected, it's likely that your backups are also going to be encrypted. So back up your data regularly. And when you need to, also make sure that backup is offline. One of the more common things that we're seeing with these situations is extortion. So not just are you going to have to pay to get your data back so you can read it, they may make a copy of your data for themselves and state, if you don't pay us, one, you will not be able to unencrypt your data, and we will also release the data that we found to the general public. And so for a variety of people, that can be a great risk as well. So try to store those sensitive data files offline as well, because that also limits kind of that risk of somebody being able to take that information and put it out there somewhere public. So, you know, keep your stuff safe and offline if possible, and make sure you do regular backups. Outside of that, just be very aware of, you know, your surroundings and the emails you get. Be very conscious of what abnormal looks like and when you should be on guard.
Steve in Milwaukee wants to know if there are any ways to boost Bluetooth connection. He has a Bluetooth connector for home stereo, but the connection gets wonky when he leaves the room with the phone.
Yes, and there are a variety of ways you can actually do it, and in some cases you might actually be able to get a longer distance transmitter. So there could be a variety of things that you want to do. It depends on the device that you're using, and they do have transmitters that will allow you to repeat that signal so that you can pick it up in different areas. You also might want to consider, it depends on the version of Bluetooth you have for your devices. You might see Bluetooth, you know, 3, 4, 5. Usually the later versions of Bluetooth might have extended ranges. So it actually might also just be easier to get a newer Bluetooth device, because it may also have an extended range, not just to transmit, but also to receive. So if you do have an older device, I might take a look to see what version it is to see if you might be able to extend some of that distance just by updating your Bluetooth. But you can get some options out there to extend it. But Bluetooth is definitely meant for a shorter range. It's been extended over time just due to, you know, new usage, just as we're traveling throughout a building. But I would take a look at some of those options, check your Bluetooth version, see if a newer device might help. But there are a variety of ways to extend it. It can be tricky, and a lot of times you might need what they call line of sight, so a clear vantage point from A to B without walls in between.
That makes sense. And what's a new one cost?
It depends on the device. Bluetooth receivers can be relatively inexpensive, probably $10 or $20. Depends on your device. So I would take a look and see what your options are.
Talking today with Jesse LeGrue, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Question about your computer or about your phone, you're having some problems, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, talking about what to look for in wireless headphones today on the show and answering your other tech questions as well with our guest, Jesse LeGrue, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Call in with any of your technology questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Dean in Green Bay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, as far as security with your files from your computer, if I have multiple drives, you know, like I have a data drive and I have an audio drive, for instance, is there a way to temporarily disconnect one of those drives while I'm browsing, so that, you know, just for security purposes, so that I'd be less likely to be able to be infected or hacked?
If they're internal hard drives, so if you have a desktop or a system like that, you can turn them off so they're not accessible by the system. But it's still a risk where somebody could turn it back on and encrypt it. So it wouldn't be the most foolproof way to make sure that they're not encrypted. The easiest mechanism to do it is just to make sure they're physically unplugged. So that's where using an external hard drive would be a benefit. You could also use, you know, a network hard drive, but then you need to turn or unplug the network cable every now and again as well. So really that physical separation is going to be really important. You can do it with a desktop, but then in most cases, a lot of people would need to turn off their computer, open up their case, unplug a cable, and then turn their computer back on. So it's really time intensive. A lot of people may not feel comfortable doing it. The best way is to actually put that data on a physically separate device, which also just makes it easier, where you can unplug it whenever you need to. You can take it somewhere else for safekeeping. So it gives you a lot of other benefits. So potentially you could, if you're using a Windows device, you can actually turn off drive letters in computer management. But even in that case, because you can turn it off, means somebody else, if they have control of your computer, can turn it on. So you still have that potential risk. I would still recommend use an external drive, unplug it when you don't need it. That also gives you some options for storing that drive somewhere else, just to make sure that your data is safe outside of just somebody accessing it.
There you go, Dean. Thank you so much for calling. Mike in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Jesse, I'd like to give you an example, and then maybe you can comment about the correct procedures or what the caution should be. So, you know, so let's say you're on the road, you're traveling, and you're in a McDonald's, or you're in your hotel room that evening, and you want to book a hotel room for the next night. And you're about to use Hotwire, you're going to enter your credit card information, and you're on a Wi-Fi network. So, I mean, could you turn the Wi-Fi network off and then force your cell phone into cell mode, cell service mode, and then that way the data is encrypted? Or, and I'm talking about without using a VPN network also. So just comment in general about this kind of thing and what we should be thinking about.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I'll give a couple examples. So I think your one option of, you know, you have a wireless network, it's kind of untrusted, but you do have a cell phone, you know, you are connected to your cell phone provider. I think turning off your wireless on your cell phone to make sure that you're only using that cellular provider is a good step to make sure that there's nothing untrusted on the wireless network. I would also just, you know, double check, make sure that the website that you're entering that credit card information into is a trusted site, that it is protected using what we call SSL or encryption. And you normally see a lock or HTTPS in the web address, but make sure it's a trusted website. If you've used it before, great. If you've never used it before, I'd be a little bit more cautious. So using cellular only is a great idea. If you did decide you actually do want to use wireless, and I think you brought up VPN, that's another great option in many cases. One thing I actually do have that I keep around with me, and this works great for travel, is you can actually get little wireless routers that are extremely mobile that you can use for VPN connections to set up your own wireless network, and it actually gives you protection in between you and that public wireless internet, where you can connect to a secure encrypted network and then have that network connect to a different wireless or wired network. So it gives you additional protection. You have a little bit more control, but you can actually have that device also VPN out to an outside entity, which helps to also encrypt and tunnel that traffic so no one can read it, even on that other wireless network. So there's a variety of things you can do. I think just using cellular and turning off your wireless is a really good option, which I think is another good reminder. If you don't need it, turn it off. And a lot of people do even mention that with Bluetooth. I think it's challenging for us to do it. But anything you have turned on your device is a potential risk for someone to interact with your device when you don't want them to. So that could be Bluetooth, that could be wireless, it could even be cellular. But if you don't need it turned on at any point, it's always a good idea to turn it off. It'll help to protect your device if you're not using those features. But it also might actually save you battery life, which is even better. So if you want to make sure your device is usable for a longer period of time, turning off those services helps to give you more of that battery life.
Mike, thanks again. Appreciate it. Ron in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Larry, I always enjoy the show. And Jesse, it's nice having you on. I'm a retired IBM systems engineer. And my name is Ron, and I am a confirmed Apple-aholic now. I've dealt with every version of Windows imaginable, and I've had it. My question is this. First of all, before I say this, I'm going to be brief. Always run as a non-administrator. Set up a separate account. Run as a whatever you want to call it. But that's a good way to protect your computer. Secondly, I've got two MacBook Pros that are my lifeblood, and I've heard that updating to the newest Mac operating systems, i.e. Big Sur now, can really render these virtually to boat anchor status. In other words, they hit the BIOS, and you can't charge, things of that nature. So, little concern.
What do you think about that, Jesse?
Yeah, and I think any update can be, well, can produce its challenges. And it's specifically with any big update, especially for Apple devices, I think they have a relatively great way of helping you to back it up, whether it's through Time Machine or even using Target Disk Mode, which since you have multiple Macs, this could also be a really great option. And there are a lot of cloning utilities, too, that you have for your devices. it will really back up the software. If you do need to reset your firmware, I think there are some options for that, but I haven't seen it on more recent devices. If I were interested in an upgrade, I probably would take one of the devices, boot it into target disk mode, which allows you to basically use it like an external hard drive. You could actually connect it to your other Mac, maybe capture a disk image using the disk utility or using a different cloning utility that might be freely available. I think there's some ones for minor cost. Then upgrade, see what happens. If it doesn't work, you can always restore back. If you do have Time Machine, I think that's another great option. But a lot of times, just capturing that disk image is usually a bit quicker to restore. It can also be quicker to back up. It just takes a little bit more effort. But I would basically give yourself an option to restore back to a previous version if you did have that issue. I think being able to restore just from that software copy is going to at least give you that possibility to fix potentially something that broke if it does happen. So I'd recommend doing that backup. Give it a shot, see what it looks like, and you can always restore. I don't believe that would cause any issues. I've done it on different systems before, and unless there's been a dramatic shift, I believe that should work in this case as well.
There you go, Ron. Thank you so much for calling. Speaking of updating, Tom emailed. He sees that Microsoft Windows 11 is coming out. How different is it? And is it more secure than Windows 10? Also, he has a laptop and keyboard. That's not working. But first, what about Windows 11?
Yeah, so I have not seen at least the new versions of Windows 11, what's new. It does sound like the user interface is going to be a little bit different, and I think that's one of the things that stressed people out with even Windows 8. They had the new tile interface. It scared a lot of people because we lost the start menu, which is, you know, largely back with Windows 10, but it does sound like there's going to be some changes in the user interface. So some people might be excited, some people might not be. In terms of security, I think Microsoft's been doing a good job making improvements over time, not just in Windows, but even in their other products such as Windows Defender. So I would anticipate a lot of improvements there. I think one item that's come up recently is the requirement for something called TPM, Trusted Platform Module, which actually might even call back to a previous caller about encryption, but it's something that allows you to take advantage of different cryptographic technologies and secure your device, whether it's using BitLocker for encryption or other identity proofing mechanisms. So there will definitely be some improvements. I haven't seen at least any kind of sneak peek yet, but you know, likely we're going to see some differences that are probably going to stress some people out. But I think we are going to see some improvements in other areas. And I think that shift in requiring TPM is a kind of a benefit for security for those devices. But it also might mean in order to use Windows 11, you actually might need a newer device if you don't already have a TPM chip on your computer. And I think anything in the last few years, you should probably be okay. It would only be a really old device that you're probably going to need to be concerned with. So it will be exciting. It'll be interesting. I think it's going to be an interesting shift in a variety of ways. But hopefully it's going to work well for most people. It's usually that user interface and how people interact with it is the most challenging. So when anything looks different, it's going to be a little bit trickier for people to embrace it. And I think that's likely going to be one of the bigger challenges.
And he says his keyboard on his laptop isn't working. He doesn't know how to fix it. He's using the on-screen keyboard now. Where or how can he get that keyboard fixed?
Yeah, one thing I'd recommend, if it's a laptop keyboard, there might not be much you can do. If you do have a laptop and it is a laptop keyboard, I would actually recommend, you know, rebooting your computer. Normally when your computer starts up, it has options, you know, press this key to enter setup. Try pressing that key, see if it detects anything. If it works on boot up but not in Windows, it at least tells you something, there is something weird with Windows. If it doesn't work in either situation, you probably need to replace the keyboard. You can usually buy it online. A lot of them are customer installable, and they might only cost you $30 to $50, but it depends on your device. If it's physically plugged in and it's a desktop, I would unplug it, try to plug it into a different port and see if it works. Otherwise, see if you can borrow a keyboard from someone else, plug in the keyboard, see if that one works. And if it does, it's likely you might just need a new keyboard. So I would try a different port just to see if you're able to get it to work in that situation. Hopefully it's relatively straightforward. Sometimes USB ports die. Sometimes keyboards die. You just never know. But I think rebooting your computer to see if it works in that setup screen before you get to Windows will at least let you know whether it's a Windows issue or if it's a computer or a keyboard issue. And then from there, you can go a little bit deeper to see if you might need to try a different keyboard or even find someone who can lend you one. And that's a great recommendation, too, if you have a laptop. You can always plug in an external keyboard into a laptop. So if this is a laptop computer, try plugging in an external keyboard. If that seems to be working well in Windows, it actually could be an issue with the keyboard. It could be that the keyboard's disabled. I usually doubt it in that case, but it gives you something to test to see if it's Windows or not.
Bob in Sussex, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I enjoy watching or listening to your show. I am a technical writer, and I use Adobe FrameMaker to publish PDFs that are highly interactive with lots of hotspots. And I'm encountering a problem where people are complaining that when they use their Adobe Reader, the navigation buttons are not working. In other words, advance forward or the previous page. So I'm wondering if your guest has any insight about what might be at the root of that problem.
That's a good question. And so I've never used Adobe FrameMaker in the past. One thing I would recommend for any of these, a lot of things that can take place can be based upon the version of Adobe Reader that they're using or the version of any PDF software they might be using outside of Adobe Reader to view the content that you're looking at. So the only thing I could really recommend is collecting some of the information from end users in terms of, you know, what version of Adobe Reader are you using, or what version of, you know, Windows, Mac OS, Linux are you using. Getting some additional details might help you identify where the issues reside. The only other real recommendation I could have is with anything that's a little bit more specialized in terms of software, I would actually have different ways to test to see how it works on other platforms. So you might actually want to have a version of Windows with different versions of Adobe Reader to test the accessibility with previous versions. And I would also look for the same thing with different versions of Mac OS and even Linux, which makes it really, really complicated when trying to do it. But if you are using and leveraging locally installed versions of Adobe Reader, you're really dependent on what they have on their own system. My guess is it's going to be some kind of incompatibility or some interesting difference between, you know, their operating system and their version of Adobe Reader and the version of FrameMaker that you're using to create your content. And a lot of those are really difficult to address, especially if people are not able to upgrade to newer versions for whatever reason. But I would look into that first to see where the issue is. Hopefully you will find a commonality between the individuals that are having issues and the ones that aren't.
Thank you for that question. Amy in Milwaukee was naughty. She says if she hasn't backed up her laptop in years, she knows that's bad. Will it take a while to perform the backup once it starts? She realizes it's also dependent on how much information you have on your device.
Right. And, you know, everything depends from person to person. If you've had the same computer for quite some time, you've never had to use an external hard drive, And even if your computer is, let's say, 5 years old, if you get a, you know, an external hard drive to back up to, it could be done in 10 minutes. It could be done probably not in 10 hours. I would say it's probably going to be sooner than that. What's probably going to slow things down are probably the USB ports that you have on your computer. If you have USB 2 or 3, which are, you know, relatively new, and on most computers you're going to have a USB 3 port. You'll see it. It's going to look blue when the other ones do not look blue. That will be faster. But it's very likely if you do want to run a backup, Windows does have a built-in backup utility that will allow you to back everything up. Usually that first backup is the longest one. You can let it run overnight. Every backup after that will be a little bit quicker. To help protect it, I would just recommend unplugging that backup device when not in use to make sure that if something bad does happen to your computer, it doesn't also happen to your external hard drive. So it might be quick. It might be a little bit longer, but it depends. And I will note one thing, and this is on the separate topic of BitLocker and encrypting automatically. One item I would take a look at in this case is verify that you have UEFI enabled in the BIOS, which you may already have, but it could also be legacy. The other item is the recommendation is to also use what they call, well, most people call it NBAM, which is a Microsoft utility for administering BitLocker. And it does have features that allow you to do more of that, but it does require on having some high volume licensing agreements with Microsoft. So using NBAM would be a recommendation. You may or may not have that, but if you do not have that now and you are looking to manage BitLocker in an enterprise, that is definitely something to take a look into that's gonna allow you to do much more automation and hopefully solve the issue that you're encountering right now.
Running a little short on time, but Ann in Madison wonders, is the cloud safe from things like ransomware or spyware?
I guess simple answer is no. The cloud is really just computers running in a different environment, not something that you own. So that risk is still out there. Ransomware could potentially impact cloud services as well.
And on that note, Jesse, we are out of time. The show went quickly from my point of view. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. And we'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it.
I look forward to it.
Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Always great to have him on. He'll be back in a couple of months, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk with a guest about everything you need to know about prostate cancer. Then at 11:45, an expert from the Carbone Cancer Center talks more generally about cancer research and emerging treatment options. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. There's lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.